Kilo Delta Zero Tango Yankee Uniform, Katie Zero TYU. Joe here in Loveland. I am the net control for the TechNet for this evening. You do not have to be a club member or anything like that to join us. So if you'd like to check in, please call.
Kilo Echo Zero Juliet Whiskey Hotel, Gary in Greeley.
Good evening, Gary. What's new with you?
Oh, nothing too great. I just stuck an antenna outside. I've been talking to you on a mag mount sitting on my mantle in the basement. It's been getting through. Now at least I put the mag mount outside.
Yeah, we've been blessed with a lot of things at NCART, and one of them is we put these repeaters way up on a mountain that's a million feet in the air, and it can see most over the whole state. So we've got real good luck with handhelds pretty much everywhere, and thanks to KI0KN, who has done a tremendous job getting things right and getting things online and things like that. I think we are really, really lucky.
Yeah, that's for sure. My original sign-in a few weeks ago was on a Bofang, just at 5 watts. It worked out good.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, when we get new people into the club or something, or we test them, OJ test them or something like that, they first ask, well, what's the first radio I should buy? And we do recommend the Bofang, not because it's a great radio or anything like that, but it gets them talking for $25, and we know with these repeaters, it'll work.
Yeah, they're cheap, easy to use, and they do get through to the repeater.
You're absolutely right. Thank you, my friend, for checking in. Anyone else want to check in for tonight's net, please call.
Oh, good evening, Joe, and 7GES.
Hi, Kevin, what's up?
Not a whole lot, just sitting here in the office having a little ice cream and enjoying the net here.
Glad to hear that. Glad to hear that. You know, I've been trying to HF. Have you been on HF lately?
Not really. Not very much. Did high noon net on Thursday, but really very little looking around, tuning around.
Yeah, I was hoping Dean get on here tonight. Maybe he will later on, because I had absolutely no luck. And maybe it's me. I don't know. It's showing the bands are fair. They're not great, but I screwed around this weekend and just kind of give up. I guess maybe if I spent a couple hours on it, I'd probably get somebody, but I don't know. Well, thank you, Kevin, for checking in. Anybody else want to check in for tonight's net, please call.
Hey, just remember, Joe, sometimes they show the bands are fair and they may not be as they were advertised to be, so sometimes listening is the only way you know.
There are zero sunspots.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday. I thought, oh boy. Well, it is what it is. I mean, again, everybody talks about the weather, nobody does anything about it.
Well, Joe, zero sunspots usually means ground wave rather than a skip, so that's basically an insert to BIQ.
Thanks for that, Kerry. Yeah, you're absolutely right. it's what I'm realizing. Hey, before we get started here, I'm just going to tell you that a couple announcements. First of all, we do record these nets. We are not looking at anything viciously. We're not looking at people, what they say on the net. Of course, we want to keep some sort of protocol. The reason we do this is so we can post them on our website. There's a lot of people that's asked questions and said, well, why don't you provide a script for this? And it would be literally impossible, I think, for someone to script this, everything that's out there. So at least if you had my abilities, it'd be impossible. I'll let this drop for a minute. So therefore, we do publish these things on the website. Just go under supplies and resources, and they'll be down there. This is for your benefit. You can listen to the whole net or take pieces about it if you want. I think you can even download it if I remember right. I guess I've never tried, so I don't know. However, they are large files. They can be anything from 50 to 100 megs, so be aware that they are that large. This is KDZO-TYU, net control for this evening's TechNet. One more announcement. The next couple weeks we're taking off due to vacations and everything else that's going on. So our next TechNet will be on January 9th. That'll be 2 weeks from this evening. And because of Christmas and New Year's holiday, we thought we'd just kind of take it off. Normally this time of year, it's hard to get people involved in any type of nets. However, the Wednesday nights, since they are far enough away, will still go. Our club nets, they will be on, so there. Does anybody else have any announcements before we start asking questions? Okay, let's go to KU0EZU. Mike, you've got to have some questions for us this evening, don't you? Go ahead.
KU0EZU. Honestly, Joe, I don't have any questions. I was hoping to learn a lot tonight. I'm waiting for these guys to talk about E-Star. Hello.
Well, what would you like to know about D-Star, my friend?
I don't know, Joe. I'm just new to it, and I just, anybody that's got some information on it, I'd greatly appreciate it. KU0EZU.
KU0BCM.
BCM, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just commenting on the D-Star questions. I am new to D-Star also, and my question was more of, it seems to be the repeater owner, whoever up here, to sign up for the actual D-Star and get one of their call signs. The links are not working, and it's not able to find any info on it.
AA0RX, Gary, do you know anything about that?
Are you looking to get registered, or you are looking for a repeater to get on just to talk to the repeater?
KU0BCM, I'm looking to get registered to get the D-Star ID.
Well, you can look at a site called D-Star Users, and you search Colorado, it'll give you KD0LUX in Broomfield. And when you get to their website, they'll give you complete descriptions on how to register there.
KU0BCM, thank you for that. I wrote that down, and I will definitely check that out.
And if you need any help with that, if you have a question, just shoot me an email. I'd be glad to help you through the process.
Sounds good, sir. Thank you very much.
Gary, while you're on there, we've got two guys here that are brand new to D-Star. Can you give them some tips or hints on how to start out?
Well, the best thing you could do is grab an Elmer. Somebody's doing that, and we're interested in that. Get a pool of people, N0WIQ, myself, K0OJ. There's a few others around here, and grab a hold of them and just ask them some questions. So, you know, don't sweat this. There's so much information out there, and there's lots of misinformation. And there are lots of people that try to misinform people as to how and the facts are about D-Star. So just be advised, if you need help, I could Elmer you if you wish. Shoot me an email.
Well, KE0EZU, did that help? Or would you like to have Gary give you a call?
KE0EZU, of course that helps. Anything I can hear about D-Star, I love it.
Yeah, shoot me an email and I'll give you a holler and we'll go from there.
Mike, did you copy that, EZU?
Affirmative, EZU.
are there any other questions about D-Star at this time? Please call. Okay, somebody had some questions about Echolink, or maybe questions, or I don't know who was it. Was it Tom or Jim? I can't remember who it was that had was just starting out in Echolink. Please come back. Well, I guess they left us, but anybody who has any interest in EchoStar, we are on EchoStar right now. EchoStar is running on the 275 in lieu of the 115, because 115 is down. We have taken out the messages that were hitting us last week and the week before, so therefore there's a different tone that will come in there, which I am supposed to be able to recognize and be able to find out if the person's in there, and we'll go for that. And while we're on here, let's give a call to Echolink. Anybody that's on Echolink that would like to check in, please call now.
Well, nobody's on Echolink at this moment because of the courtesy tone at the end, but you said EchoStar instead of Echolink. So is it D-Star, Echolink, or EchoStar? K0PRB.
Well, EchoStar is the Dish Network, so it's not EchoStar, it's Echolink. If I said EchoStar, I do apologize. But no, there's D-Star, and D-Star is a digital format for ICOMs and Kenwoods. And Echolink is, and I might have said EchoStar because I almost did that time. Echolink is an internet link that we have actually set up with a node on this particular repeater.
Joe, this is Phil. For crying out loud, I'm giving you a hard time. K0PRB.
Phil, I could have said it wrong. There's no question about that. I don't have my wife sitting right here and pointing this way. I really don't know what to say.
K0BCM.
BCM, go ahead.
In regards to the Echolink, it actually works out really well. I talked to, I don't remember who it was, about a week ago. I was at work in West Africa, and I actually got a hold of two guys at like 2 o'clock in the morning out here and chatted for a little bit. So I do concur that it does work, and it's pretty cool. KZRBCM.
Yeah, to kind of confirm that, Echolink is a free service. You can put it on your cell phone. You can put it on your computer. You can do just about anything. I have not found any problems with setting it up. And if someone's having problems setting it up, please give us a call now or whenever. And I can maybe walk you through it because it's not really a difficult setup, especially on an iPhone. You just kind of say you want it and give them your call sign and it's done. It does set up a node for you, but it's all automatic. There's no registering or anything except for the call sign. So if anybody's having trouble setting it up, please call now.
Oh, I just heard the courtesy tone. It sounds like someone is on Echolink at this time. So if you're on Echolink, please say something.
That may be that they just signed off, too. We'll give them one more call. If you're on Echolink and want to join our net, please definitely do. Please call now.
K1TJ, you can check me in there. I connected on Echolink and tried to transmit back to the machine, and it dumped me off. That was me. But anyway, good evening, K1TJ.
Hi, Tom. We heard you check in, but we heard you get in, but yeah, and then we heard you get cut right off, so I have no idea. That's James's deal on that. James isn't on this evening yet.
Well, I'll try and connect it again here and try one more time, but carry on. K1TJ. Oh, we'll try it now. There we go. K1TJ, I'm the Echolink here on my Android phone.
Sounds good, Tom. I don't think there's any problem at all. Really does sound good.
All right. Well, very good. Yeah, anybody that has it on their, you can get on your Android device, you can get it on your iPhone, whatever, you can come in off the computer. It's pretty neat for anybody that hasn't played with it.
You're definitely right, and the nice part about it is free. You've got it on a desktop. I have it on a desktop, and I have it on the cell phone, too. So it's definitely a free service, and this Echolink node is up all the time, up 24 hours. So if you want to give somebody a holler, please do. Let's go on to our questions. Does anybody have any questions about anything out there? We will take that right now. Please call. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go on to N0WIQ. I've got a question about sunspots. You mentioned that zero sunspots will kind of destroy any type of skip propagation. How many sunspots does it take to actually reestablish that? Go ahead, Kerry.
Well, I'd have to defer to somebody else that has paid more attention to that stuff, but the way sunspots affect things is they ionize the ionosphere so the signals will skip, especially low-frequency signals will skip from the ground to the ionosphere and back down to the ground. And then if there's no sunspots, there's less ionization effect on the ionosphere. And so you're talking about something called ground wave for the majority of the communications. Now, different wavelengths have different ground wave characteristics. So there is that about it, too. So you can still get a few hundred miles with just a ground wave, but hey, that's basically all I know about it. And even one sunspot will cause a certain amount of ionization. So, back to Ned.
Comment.
Go right ahead with your comment.
Yeah, if you want to know more about sunspots, you can check out Ham Nation and specifically Dr. T on YouTube, and it's probably the finest information you could find out about every detail you could possibly want to know about sunspots and how they interact with radio. It can be found on YouTube.
Gary or anybody, I do have kind of a question, a follow-up for that. Is it possible for not us, but someone else to be able to predict, not predict for propagation, but possibly predict the solar flux and the sunspots?
Yeah, Joe, you need to see the videos that she puts out, but the sunspots are daily put out every day by the Boulder lab over there where she runs that. So anyway, there's solar wind and all kinds of things that affect radio, and there's a published article every day from her outfit. So I highly recommend Dr. T. Check out some of her YouTube videos, and it definitely does. It is predicted, and they can see different things that occur that will affect radio. Right now we're in a down cycle, and the next 2 or 3, 4 years is not going to be very good for HF.
Right. It's the 11-year cycle. The thing to look up is CME, or coronal mass ejection. That is what would affect sunspot activity the most. Actually, sunspot creates CMEs. So coronal mass ejection can be on different levels and put itself out there, and it's from that ionization or the ejection of sun material into space that reacts with our atmosphere and causes that ionization in the in that region. Anyway, yeah, this is K0PRB.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, is there any difference between when we're closer to the sun or farther away from it? Is there any difference in how that would affect the propagation at all?
Well, it can, yes, it can affect the magnitude, and a lot of it has to deal with the angle of emission from the CME, as to whether or not it's going to be, you know, toward Earth or out other areas. So it can, if it's toward Earth, we'll see more of a magnitude of that occur. Where if it's off to one side or the other, then not so much. We're always concerned what's directed toward Earth, of course, because it can knock out satellites and cause other outages here and there. But all of it has to do with how well we will propagate.
This is Katie Zero TYU Net Control for this evening's TechNet. So does, I guess, to kind of follow up on that, is it closer to the sun, you have a better shot? In other words, if we're closer to the sun, we've got a better shot at a propagation than we would away from it. Is that correct, or am I getting that all screwed up too?
No, you're not all screwed up on that, because there are certain circumstances where that can be affected, or cause and effect type of deal. But it's more of the angle of the CME itself, whether or not it's aimed toward us, because after the CME, there is a delay as to, you know, if it's going to hit Earth, if it's not, if we're going to catch part of it. I mean, it's a crapshoot, you know, in many different ways.
One thing I've even noticed is that whatever we see on the HF propagation sheets that we look at, and I've got a couple of them I look at pretty much daily, it doesn't necessarily mean that it affects Colorado. Is it different in different parts of the country too?
Well, for the most part, based on the magnitude of the sun, and Earth, you know, we're such a small object to everything else in the universe. No, probably not as much. I mean, there will be some differences here and there, but what comes toward Earth comes toward Earth. I mean, it's going to give everybody pretty much the same opportunity, I should say, as to whether it hits right. Another person, well, I don't think he checked in, is W0LEV. He can probably talk to some of this even more so than I.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I haven't heard anything from Dave this evening. He sometimes checks in, maybe once or twice a month, but it's he has not checked in this evening. You're correct. Well, thank you for that. Did anybody else have any questions about anything right now? Please call.
WIQ?
N0WIQ. Go ahead, Carrie.
Well, about Dave, he was on just before the net and asking about the question of the night. And I told him we had an open forum for part of the net, and if we get around to the actual question, we will. And he said he was going to be listening, but I don't know if he can hear us now because he was going to have his evening meal. So you might give Dave a call and see if you can get his attention. But he was interested in the question. In other words, he wanted to know how interested in the net he wanted to be.
Well, as most of you have known, we've been experimenting with the question of the week, and then every third or fourth week, and this would be our third week, we open it up to an open forum just so people can actually ask questions. Somebody's actually even mentioned to me that it would be better off if we put our question first and then go from there and then open it up. So right now what we're doing is we're opening this up just to any questions that anybody would have out there. So we really don't have a topic for tonight, but if anybody wants to bring one up, we certainly can.
comment about Echolink is using the internet to connect to various places in the world and doing voice over IP. And that's about all I know about it. And, well, the little bit I played with it, it was fairly simple to set up, except that I didn't know quite enough details about how to set it up for myself. And that's it's kind of like networking with RF. And it kind of falls back to networking is networking is networking is networking. So Echolink uses telephone numbers to get from one point to another. Packet radio uses AX25 protocol to go through a network, RF networks. D-Star is another form of networking over RF, and so, and networking basically means that you have to have data in a packet that can be addressed to various places, and that's the simple part of networking. The hard part is figuring out how to address these places.
Well, I found the only thing that's difficult about an Echolink is find out who you want to talk to. There's repeaters, there's groups you can join, there's various other things, and to paw through the thousands and thousands of those and overseas connections to be able to find something, that's the difficulty. WZUPS, which is our node, and we're node R, I think, or it's either R or S. I don't remember which one this one is. I think it's S. You can get in that just by jumping in, but there's so much available on Echolink that it's just amazing. I've talked to Illinois with it, Michigan, England. Digital is somewhat similar to that if you're dealing with the internet type things and going worldwide. Echolink is a good thing and it's free. KDZO TYU, Net Control for this evening's TechNet. Let's have some questions. Anybody got any questions out there they'd like to ask our board here? Please call.
Comment.
Go right ahead, Gary. Your comment?
Yeah, in terms of Echolink, you can actually have a really good time. It's very cheap. You can buy a cheap Raspberry Pi for about $30. And you can modify a Baofeng to actually do all the work for you. There's a guy across the pond that works on that, and I don't have a website at the time for you, but just peruse on the internet. You can check it out, but it's very cheap. You can use a Baofeng and just a Raspberry Pi, and Echolink becomes very versatile and very fun for under $60.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and my 71A apparently has got Echolink built in. I'm not really sure how that works, but the Kenwood 71A has got something, a button in the middle, that you're supposed to be able to connect with Echolink, and I guess I'm not sure how that would even work.
Yeah, roger that. Well, the interface is kind of fun if you just use the HT, because then it makes you feel like you're really getting out there, you know. It's kind of fun, more or less, and for me personally, I don't really like to use my telephone to Echolink in. Unless it's emergency or I need to get in there or something. For me personally, that's not so fun, but if you have the HT between you and the interface, it makes it much more fun.
A0RQ, or RX, sorry.
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, Gary, K0PRB, Phil. Explain Raspberry Pi. I'm not sure everybody understands what Raspberry Pi is on this net.
Yeah, the Raspberry Pi is a small computer about the size of a credit card that you can have a lot of fun programming and doing all kinds of different radio things with, almost like an Arduino. It was designed to get kids into getting into IT and having fun with computer sciences. So it comes from across the pond. You can Google the Raspberry Pi Foundation and find out a whole lot more than I can tell you in a minute or a 30-minute dissertation. So highly recommend you look at some of this stuff on the internet. Raspberry Pi Foundation.
Thanks, Gary. Yeah, there are so many different things you can do with a Raspberry Pi. It's not just geared toward radio, it's geared toward everything. You know, you can set it up to use Wi-Fi, you can set it up to robotics, you can set it up for all kinds of different things. Sorry, I was interrupted. Anyway, go for it.
WIQ with an ad in them.
NZWIQ, go ahead, Gary.
Well, you could set up a Raspberry Pi. It is an all-in-one computer. So you could set it up as a PC workstation. You can set it up for any number of things. The D-Star hotspot that you can make with a Raspberry Pi requires a DVMega board attached to the Raspberry Pi. And it effectively, the Raspberry Pi connects to the internet and expands what you can do with a low signal radio and a Raspberry Pi hotspot. And away you go. With D-Star, anyway.
Just a question. Now I have never worked with a Raspberry Pi, but I've been with people that have. And you're right, it's a mini computer. Does it have built-in Wi-Fi?
As far as I know, the answer is no. You have to put in a Wi-Fi dongle that is compatible with the Raspberry Pi. But, yeah. It does Wi-Fi to an internet, or it can be cabled to an internet. I'll put it that way.
Comment?
Correct.
Comment?
Go ahead, Gary. I think you were first.
Yeah, the Pi 3s do have Wi-Fi on board and also Bluetooth, but it's they use the same pin as the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth, and so therefore it's hard to get them both operating successfully. They can be done, but there's a little bit more trickery done in that. So, the new Raspberry Pi 3 B Pluses have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth.
So in theory, you could tie those things to a hotspot, right?
You could tether a Raspberry Pi to just about any Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. I use the Bluetooth for the keyboard and the Wi-Fi to access the internet, or I use my phone's hotspot and access that way. So there's multiple ways you can get in and use that.
So how do you tie in the HT to that?
There's a gentleman by the name of Goose Van Doren that makes a DV Megaboard, and it's a radio with a DVSI chip on it. And with the DV Megaboard, you can program it to do P25, DMR, System Fusion, and of course D-Star. So it's a very versatile little Raspberry Pi. Can do a whole lot of radio fun.
Copy that. Anybody else have any question about that? That's kind of cool.
DDZ, I know he knows a lot about the Raspberry Pis.
And Gary came in there. If you had a comment, please come back.
Might have doubled with you, Joe, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I just seen if DDZ was in here, he could express a whole lot about the Raspberry Pi, if he's still around.
W0DDZ. Dave, you in there?
Oh yeah, I'm here. The Raspberry Pi is a credit card sized computer that is Linux based. And they're quite cool. The previous versions, the original and then the plus, the B, then the 2, and then the 2 plus, they all lacked Wi-Fi. You'd have to get a dongle and power on them can be a little scarce, so it's better to do a powered USB to get them to have Wi-Fi. But once you get them to work, they are quite capable little machines, probably comparable to a computer back in around the year 2000. So I have used one to add a locking mechanism to my kegerator, making it have a RFID tag lock. So you'd have to have an RFID card in order to and scan that at the kegerator, and it would check the card against its database and unlock the keg if you had permission to drink.
Dave, if anything was important, that is.
I want an RFID chip.
Do you have a solenoid that will activate if somebody's allowed to use it?
Yeah, affirmative. Gary, I have a RFID tag for you, by the way. Yeah, so you would, it has a solenoid with a flow meter in there, and it would open the valve if you have permission and allow you to get your beer, and it counts the ticks, and those ticks are equivalent to a certain amount, so you can tell how much is going out of it, and you can close the solenoid when it either stops flowing or if it filled up, if they only have permission to have like a 20-ounce, not fill a pitcher, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, the ability for the machine, I mean, and you can obviously, the more in-depth you get with it, the more it can do. I mean, I had started programming all sorts of stupid features into it.
Okay, 6VPE clear. All right, K0PRB, this is, it was Phil who asked about the flow and the solenoid. That's very cool. You know, I have two kegs built in my home, and I like that concept.
Well, there's two really, really big resources with both Arduinos and with Raspberry Pis. There is Adafruit, and locally in Boulder, there's actually SparkFun, and they both sell the Arduinos and Raspberry Pis, but more importantly, they sell lots of components for them, like the flow sensors and the solenoids and all sorts of neat things to do projects with. That's Adafruit and SparkFun.
Okay, good to know. K0PRB didn't mean to take this down to a path of beer. But anyway, back to the net.
Beer, radio, and computers, I don't know what better combo there is.
I personally think it's one of the better subjects we've had all year, to be honest with you. That is so cool. I've never heard anybody be able to computerize a keg. It's interesting. I have to ask, Dave, why did you do it in your home, though?
Oh, research and development, you know. I've even registered the domain IQ Keg, and yeah, it's all just a matter of having enough time to actually program everything, and yeah, just time-consuming, you know?
Well, the best answer is because he can. That's really true, Bill. The thing that I think it would be great is for a bar or something like that, because then you could actually get exactly what you're supposed to have, other than, you know, hot pours, whatever you want to call them. That would make a lot of sense in a bar. You could probably save a lot of money if you gave them exactly the right stuff. And you've got some people complaining also, I would imagine.
Well, and until it comes to that bottle of Lagavulin.
Lafroy.
Sega, I didn't copy that.
Lafroy.
Yum.
bad that wouldn't work with liquor either, because we used to brew some shots. I used to be a bartender for a long time ago, and definitely spent a lot of life both sides of the bar, so I've seen a lot of brew shots in my day.
I'm going to have to disagree. I have a design for liquor also.
Let's make it a part of our bylaws, to be a member of the club, you got to be, have a keg. That'd be a good idea. If you don't want to drink or imbibe, then you would at least have one in your shack for emergency purposes.
That would make all cases an emergency.
Okay, back over to you, Net Control. Better wind this down or Aaron's going to show up here.
Hey, Dave, you tried to sell that little invention of yours? That makes a lot of sense to a bar.
I do have plans on doing that down the road. I just need to break it out and finish programming all the features to it. So I've made it so that it works from the panel itself, but it's still lacking in the web-based control utility set that I have planned for it. It's all just a matter of me having enough time to sit down and behind my computer and actually program.
It's definitely an interesting concept for a little. What's a Raspberry Pi cost? $35, $40?
So the device uses both a Raspberry Pi and Arduino. There's also a RFID tag reader, and it has the solenoid and the flow sensor. So all together, I think I have about $250 into it.
That is so cool. That is really, really cool. I kind of come from that, from playing in bands and stuff. I kind of come from that bar background, which is not something I'm proud of, but it made me a living for a while. So I kind of know where you're coming from with this thing. It makes a lot of sense what you're doing.
Yeah, with that kind of cost, that's really nothing. But it at least gives everybody on the net an idea of what the Raspberry Pi is capable of, which the Raspberry Pi is capable, let's put it that way.
Well, and I also want to stress that it's the initial part of research and development and prototyping and actually making something work with the components that are readily available, like a Raspberry Pi and an Arduino. And then once you have the parts working, you can reduce costs by taking out the unnecessary components. For example, an Arduino is based upon a microchip, the ATmega microchip, and you can get that microchip and program it the same way you program it in the Arduino, and then mount the chip itself on the board, and then all of a sudden your $25 or $30 Arduino is now $2.
Well, we run, as you know, many years ago when we first took over this HamFest stuff, our first year out there, we had a lot of complaints about, I lost all train of thought. Our door prices and the way we announced them and this and that, and we had so many door prices and this and that. So about 4 years ago, we went to a system where they were actually on the wall, and that is actually run through a Raspberry Pi because we actually tie into, I believe it's Facebook, if I remember right, and illustrate with that. I mean, maybe it's something else, but anyway, yeah, we use a Raspberry Pi for that because we don't want to have a big computer sitting out there.
Yeah, their possibilities are really endless between the Arduino and the Raspberry Pi. So your Raspberry Pi is your credit card-sized computer. It can do things like run Linux and actually drive an operating system that can do things like run databases and store data for a long period and interact with other computers to make that data available to them, where a Arduino is a microcontroller. Instead of running an operating system, you're going to program the chip itself, which gives you the advantage of speed. Nothing that a computer can do gets anywhere near what a microcontroller can do speed-wise, which is why you use microcontrollers to interact with analog sensors. So they work really well together, Arduinos and Raspberry Pis. You can do, between the two of them, you can do just about anything you want.
You know, to put it in a perspective, you know, I come from the era of Commodore 64, Commodore 128, you know, the Apple IIe, et cetera. Think of Raspberry Pi as a glorified or more advanced version of these type of systems. So for many of us on the net, what we know back in the Commodore 64 era, et cetera, I mean, there were capabilities of those systems that were just beyond what we still do today in our usual computer systems, but we were limited over time. But the Raspberry Pi is very, very versatile.
WIQ, another comment?
N0 WIQ, go ahead, Carrie.
Well, when you talk about computing power within a computer, you're talking about clock speed, memory capacity, and an I.O. structure of some sort. And this is the computing power. Since they put all that on a Raspberry Pi that is running, oh, I think they got the new one up to about a gigahertz clock. It's got internal memory from the processor it uses, but the memory can be expanded by putting in a dongle, a thumb drive, and all this kind of, you can even expand the memory other ways than that, but that's the easy way, so to speak. And so, like I say, it is a PC workstation. And the latest Raspberry Pi itself is only $35. And you can hook it up to a keyboard and monitor and have a working PC workstation. Not quite as powerful as the 8-core Intel or anything like that, but on the other hand, it is a workable computer. So, that's my comment, so... There's even a kid out there to turn the Raspberry Pi into a laptop computer.
Kerry is correct. Like I said, it is so versatile, and everybody on this net should really, really research the Raspberry Pi and understand what it's capable of. Anyway, that's I'll leave it at that. We'll go and back to the net.
Just a quick clarification for all those who care, and I know I'm probably anal and care too much, but the memory is a term that refers to the amount of RAM or volatile memory that a computer has, whereas disk space would refer to the disk capacity that you can expand through the thumb drives and whatnot. So if you're talking about memory, the memory on a Raspberry Pi is not expandable. However, its disk space can be expanded in lots of ways.
Very good point.
So Dave, what is the RAM on your Raspberry Pi?
Well, that's going to be model specific. I'm pretty sure that and Gary could probably correct me if I'm wrong, Plus has 2 gig of memory.
It's 1.2 gigahertz processor and a gig of RAM on board. But my fifth Raspberry Pi that I built, I hooked up a terabyte tower to it, so I literally my Raspberry I have a terabyte tower on Raspberry Pi. so I haven't even begun to even come close to filling up the memory in the Raspberry Pi yet.
Well, and I'll be honest, I have computers in my boneyard that couldn't touch the Raspberry Pi in speed. Processing power and memory have come down really, really far, so any computer that's like pre 2000, 2001, the Raspberry Pi is cruising way past them.
So how fast are they?
Well, so if you want to think about it or put it into perspective, the processing power that it took to put a man on the moon was quite a bit back in 1969. If we had to rely on a Raspberry Pi to do that, we would be limited to only launching and landing 100,000 lunar landers simultaneously.
Yeah, I think I read someplace that the digital watch had more processing power than they had in the first lunar landing.
I mean, there was some processing power there, and I mean, NASA on the ground had been doing a lot of their calculations and had processing power down there, too. I'm talking total processing power that NASA used to put the man on the moon. The Raspberry Pi could replicate that 100,000 times over.
Well, that's extremely interesting. I do know that Darren used quite a few, will use them. I don't see James use them too much for what he's doing, but that's just because he's dealing with different things. But I do know that Darren is a big proponent of those things. And like I say, he does run all of our screens, and we run it off a Raspberry Pi, both sides, and it works really well. We've had zero problems with it. After we cured the idea that it will refresh itself. For going in as simple as we are with our things, we can do it for like $65 worth of parts, and it works flawlessly. It's a really a nice system. So I do respect what you guys are talking about with the Raspberry Pi for sure.
Well, and I will say that one of the biggest advantages I'm from an interesting time when computers were really starting to get into the consumer market and people were just starting out and everything was so rough around the edges and raw. Like Commodore 64 was like what I played with when I was a small kid, and then like around 7 I got into PC. And what their capabilities were before Windows was out. And since then, the world of computers has gotten more and more abstracted so that people really don't understand what's going on when the computer does something. And the Raspberry Pi is a great way to learn what is going on when the computer is doing stuff. While that be with many components in programming. It's a great place to start programming. It's a great place to start interacting with hardwares and learning about electrical circuits and all of that stuff. It's an amazing learning tool, and that's, like Gary said, what it was originally designed to do was to teach, and it is an amazing tool for that.
Amen. WIQ.
Go ahead, Gary.
Carrie actually won that.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, it's one of those things that I worked for a place called Hewlett-Packard when networking was in its infancy. And so I got a good education on networking from that point of view. Until I got up into the PC world and using networking to connect PCs together and things like that. And the Raspberry Pi, being Linux-based for me. All I had to do was find the documentation on what to do to make it do what I wanted it to do, and that's that. And I have another project on... Well, Gary is helping me with a project for a D-Star hotspot. And then I have yet another project I want to do with a Raspberry Pi, but I want to replace my Ethernet router with a Raspberry Pi. And having Wi-Fi capable in a B3 plus is just something I hadn't realized, so I stand corrected on that point. N0WIQ.
I totally agree with you guys. The old Commodore 64 days, I actually ran a bowling league. I actually ran a city league with a Commodore 64. But I've got one for you, Dave. Have you ever heard of a Timex Sinclair?
Well, if Dave hasn't, I have. K0PRB. Still.
W0DDZ. You know, it sounds familiar, and I'm really trying to avoid Googling it. So, go ahead, Joe.
Phil, tell what it's all about.
Yeah, the Timex Sinclair, that computer was like a handheld computer that you could work through your TV, your television, and it was very, very sophisticated for its time when it came out in the early 80s, I would say. Very, very nice computer. My brother had one. And he and I played with it a little bit before I ended up with my Commodore 64. But boy, was that ever a fun thing to play around with. It was very, very, very nice.
Yes, now that you, as soon as you said handheld computer, I was, oh yes, those things. The flashing TV play toy. Yes, that was fun.
The only thing bad about those things is if you got a program, it was usually on a cassette disc, so you go out and you buy yourself a cassette player or something like that, you plug it in, you'd run it through this thing, and 30 to 40 minutes later, it would load the program into this machine that made it work.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct on that, Joe. Yeah, I remember my brother showing me that, and he was like, okay, let's watch a movie while we load this thing.
I remember typing a program into the Commodore 64. Well, and I still make programs today. So 30 to 40 minutes, I'm down for that.
AA0RX. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with our topic, but I just stepped out the back deck here looking over Long's Peak, and there's an extremely bright white object above the peak there, and I wasn't going to say anything. I thought it was the moon maybe going down, but anybody else can confirm that there's a big bright white light on Long's there? I think maybe, anyway, hopefully nobody's in trouble, but don't panic anybody.
Well, it's totally blocked out from my view in Loveland. But, you know, the Venus is very bright these days. It's a full disk, whatnot, and so it might be what you're seeing.
Yeah, copy that. Probably nothing to be worried about. Thought it was the moon, like I said, but I watched it, and it just kind of... Usually the moon goes down over time, but it wasn't doing that. So it's kind of interesting, but it's pretty bright, and it's up above Long's. So not to worry, but we'll keep watching it.
Yeah, right time of year for that. More than likely what you're seeing is Venus. Like you said, when it's full disk, it's pretty bright.
That would be a correct assessment according to Sky Guide on my phone, K0HHX.
Yeah, not a bad idea, Gary. If you need something, just give us a holler and we can call somebody or something. But I'm the same way that everybody else is in Loveland. I'm blocked. There's just no way I can see it.
Yeah, don't panic and don't worry, and don't call anybody, no need for that, but just wanted to observe it. I'm kind of watching, and anyway, if it looks like an SOS or something like that, I'll definitely let somebody know.
Well, for those of us who are amateur astronomers, we definitely watch out for this stuff.
Okay, is your PR comment?
Go right ahead with your comment.
What are you gentlemen looking at? I'm actually at the Old Town Parking Center here in Fort Collins, heading up to the roof. So I was going to see what I can see from here.
Well, you may or may not see it. Venus is very bright these nights. Full disk, meaning that it's like a full moon to Venus. So we're going to see it very, very brightly. So if it's behind an object, especially, it's going to still put out its brightness, and you'll see something going on. But more than likely, that's what it is.
And where did you say it was located at?
Look near Long's Peak.
Oh, shoot, guys, it's just Aaron's drone.
Okay, speaking of drone, DVZ, I understand you have a drone license. Explain that, would you?
The FCC has released Part 107 of their regulations in the ability for people to get commercial drone pilot license, which I have done, and got my Part 107 drone pilot's license.
Very fascinating. What does that entail? When you say drone, is it a specific type of drone?
So the technical term is unmanned aerial system, or UAS. And I own a Phantom 3 quadcopter, but my drone pilot license will cover any unmanned aerial system between 0.55 pounds and 55 or up to 55 pounds. Yeah, it's any unmanned aerial system inside of my license is covered by my license.
You've gotten me very interested about that. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you can recreationally fly any unmanned aerial system or whatnot, but when it comes to doing them commercially, definitely there's more that you need to be aware of, so the FCC has regulated the commercial use of drones, so really it comes down to I have the ability to make money off of drones.
Make money off of? Please clarify.
Well, so as radio is a non-commercial and defined as non-commercial, so is the recreational use of drones. There, you can't make money off of them. In order to use them, in order to make profit, you need to have a commercial drone pilot's license, and that would cover any flying of the drone or any byproduct of flying off the drone needs to remain non-commercial or non-monetary until you have a commercial drone pilot's license. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It mostly comes down to safety, and the knowledge that you need to have in order to fly them safe in a lot of different changing circumstances, for sure.
Okay, so I'm guessing that it deals with photography and videography. Is that correct?
Well, that's definitely very large aspects of them. There's plenty. It's so in its infancy that the uses for them are going to be insane. One that I could see that has nothing to do with photography or videography would be, I mean, you know all of the tricks that hams have to getting antennas into the air. I think a drone would be really handy for something like that, and no photography involved.
Yes, I can understand that, where you could take a wire and run it over the top of the trees or whatever vegetation is there, correct?
But probably start with a string or something that's not a wire, but yeah, the idea would be to get it over and out beyond and then land and then pull the wire up into the sky.
Makes perfect sense, yes. Of course, the string being a lot less weighty, I should say, and then once you've got the string over the top of whatever you're trying to pull the wire through, then you can get it over the top, then pull the wire over the top of, you know, and follow the string. That's correct.
Exactly. Applications would be endless for sure.
Are there any questions on the net about that?
Well, thanks, Dave, for explaining that. I guess I was kind of curious myself. I know there's a few guys that's got drones out there. I don't think James has got a license, but he's got a drone, I believe, doesn't he?
I'm not sure about James. I know Aaron has a drone and uses it for his photography, and he has at least he used to have, I don't know about his Part 107 status, to be honest with you, but he used to have a Part 333 exemption, which is a different part and much harder to attain part of the FCC code, for sure. So I know Aaron is definitely another drone enthusiast out there.
Yeah, but don't worry. Yeah, I got my AA pilot cert here recently here in 0WAR.
There's double in there.
Go ahead, Aaron. I doubled with you. Yeah, unfortunately, I kind of wanted to hear what he said, but I can imagine he could use it quite a bit for what he does for a living.
Well, I think that he said that he got his Part 107. So there's the difference, the biggest difference between the Part 333 and the Part 107 is that the Part 333 is an exemption process done by the FAA to exempt particular rules, and it's been used and applied to the drone aspect of things, where the Part 107 is a specific rule set for drones, and it's actually a drone pilot process. So the real difference, and now you would not get a Part 333 because the Part 107 is available, unless you have specific reason to get the Part 333. W0DDZ.
This is KD0TYU Net Control for this evening's TechNet. We've kind of talked about a lot of different things. Does anybody have any questions about drones or anything else? Please call now.
I think we're all bamboozled at this point. Yeah, all good to know stuff. Thank you. K0PRB.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think everybody's thinking about Christmas and such, so I'd like to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year before we do that. And lastly, I'd like to thank everybody on this net for a great year this year. Again, the next 2 weeks, we were going to take the time off on Monday nights. We still have our Wednesday night net, but since it's so close to Christmas and New Year's, we're going to suspend the net until January 9th. And we'll pick a subject. And remember, if you've got any ideas for a subject, please email me at treasure@ncard.net, and we definitely will put that on the air for you. So are there any more questions, comments, or anything else for the net? Please call now.
Comment.
A0RX, go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, there's a new radio out. It's a Kenwood THD-74 Alpha. It does 144, 220, 440 megahertz, also a digital voice. It is a killer radio for the person that you may like for Christmas time. So take a look at that radio, and you will not be disappointed.
Give the model number again.
Yeah, that's the Kenwood TH-D-74 Alpha.
Thanks for that, Gary. That's a new one on me, too. they're all new on me. Anyone else have anything for the net? Please call now.
K0CPR, I got a question for you, Joe.
You're on, Mark. Go ahead.
Hey, I heard it was customary for Net Control to take people who have upgraded their license out to dinner the same month they did it. Is that rumor true?
No.
That was Thanksgiving. You missed it.
Nah, that was the wrong month. I did it this month. So I just checked to see. You know, you got to try for that free meal everywhere.
Mark, where'd you get the license? I guess I didn't remember you being in any shows.
A couple weeks ago, took the test and yeah, managed to get my general this time, finally. It only took me quite a few tries, but yeah, so I am officially a general.
Does that mean we got to salute you and all that stuff?
No, I still work for a living.
Congratulations on your general ticket.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Definitely, Mark. Congratulations on that. I know how hard you worked at that. Okay, to kind of wrap this up, we were on here about an hour and 45 minutes, give or take a minute or so. We had 21 check-ins, which is not a record, but it's really close. And I do appreciate everybody's support for this net. This thing started out, I wasn't real sure if we were going to get a whole lot of folks, but by golly, we're getting a whole bunch, basically more than we even get on the Wednesday night net. So remember that we're here to serve and we're here to help you folks. So if you've got any ideas or comments or questions for the net, you can either email me at treasure@ncard.net or just come on in and jump on. And remember, these are all comments. Nobody's here to chastise anybody. So, and I think we've helped out a bunch of people when we started this thing, and I'm hoping we will continue on. So if there's nothing else to that, I'd like to open the repeater for general use, and everybody have a pleasant Christmas and a very, very happy New Year. KD0TYU clear.